talking about our home. Talking about me and you. Things we'll do, I said our home.
Talking about our home.
Not talking about a one night stand. I wanna be your man, I said our home.
From the people who bring you Charleston Home and Design Magazine, the Charleston Home and Design Show, the Custom Home and Remodel Show, and Charleston's online home show, newhomecharleston.com. This is Talking About a Home. Talking About a Home is a home show on the radio, featuring interviews with local experts, home tips, trends, and ideas you need to know to make your home better. I'm Michael Blaze with Five Star Real Estate, and this is Talking About a Home.
Good afternoon. I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and I want to thank you for listening to Talking About a home show on the radio. In addition to our radio show, Talking About a Home, we also publish Charleston Home and Design Magazine, winner of the American Society of Interior Designers Excellence in Design Media Award, and also winner of the American Institute of Architects Charleston Chapter's Honor Award for Journalism. You may also be familiar with the three custom home shows we organize, the Charleston Home and Design Show, which is coming up January 29th through the 31st at the brand new Gelliard Center in downtown Charleston. Also, the Charleston Home and Design Show on Daniel Island, which happens every April, and the Charleston Home and Design Show Fall Edition, which happens every August. Well, today we've got a great show lined up for you. Today's show is being sponsored by Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning, and we're very proud to have Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning as one of the sponsors of the Charleston Home and Design Show, coming up January 29th through the 31st at the brand new Gelliard downtown. We'll be talking with James Guerin. We'll also be talking with architect Bill Huey, with Bill Huey and Associates, and very interesting interview, a little longer than our normal interview because of all the details that he shares. Also, Scott Brecky with Just Additions and Remodeling, we'll be talking to him. And then also Eddie Plowden with Berkeley Electric Cooperative. Well, I want to wish everyone a happy new year. Happy 2016. It's going to be a great year. 2015 was a great year as well. And I know it's kind of funny. We joke around about this here at our office at Charleston Home and Design Magazine about how you ask a homeowner about any projects that they have in the fall of 2015, and they don't want to talk to you about projects. But as soon as the new year rolls around, they're ready to go. And it's just kind of a mindset. Like, even though it's just a matter of days difference between one year and another, now everybody has that mental list of the projects that they want to do for their home, the improvements they want to make. Everyone wants to create the home that they've always wanted, and now it's the new year. Everybody has a project, and so it's perfect timing. We want everyone to come to the Charleston Home and Design Show January 29th through the 31st, because that's going to be a great way to really jumpstart your project and get it going for 2016. Speaking of the Charleston Home and Design Show, we've got so much going on. First and foremost, we're going to be returning to the brand new Gelliard Center in downtown Charleston, and we're so happy to be returning to our home. We've been displaced from our home away from home, the Gelliard, for the last 3 years, and we started doing our home shows at Gelliard Auditorium in 2004, and then in 2012 we had to find other places to do our home show because they closed for the renovation and practically tore down the entire building and then built it back up. And it is a beautiful beautiful building. This is definitely the most beautiful venue to have a home show in all of Charleston, and we think everyone would be very impressed. But for more information on the home show, if you want to go to charlestonhomeanddesignshow.com, charlestonhomeanddesignshow.com. Happy New Year, and have a great weekend. I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and I want to thank you for listening to Talking About a home show on the radio. Today's radio show is sponsored by Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning, and we're very proud to have Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning as one of the sponsors of the Charleston Home and Design Show, which is coming up January 29th through the 31st at the brand new Gilliard Center in downtown Charleston. And now we're talking with James Guerin with Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning. How are you doing, James?
Great, Tim. How are you doing?
Good. James, take a moment and tell everybody about Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning.
Well, at Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning, we're a full-service heating and air conditioning contractor. We've been in business since 1979, mm-hmm. And we offer any type of service you might need for your heating and cooling system.
Gotcha. So 30-plus years in business for Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning. I think that's important because we have a lot of newcomers to the area, and they may not know the difference between a company, a heating and air conditioning company that maybe started up a year or two ago and one that's been around for 30-plus years.
Exactly. And it's always a good idea to check references behind any contractor that you hire.
Mm-hmm. How many employees does Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning have?
We currently have about 65 right now.
65? Wow, that's a lot. That's impressive. And they all live locally. Smith's is a local company. You don't you serve the Tri-County area?
We serve the entire Tri-County area, and yes, it's a family-owned local company.
Gotcha. What brands of heating and air conditioning systems does Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning carry?
We carry all the major brands, Lennox, Trane, Carrier, and we can service any brand out there.
A lot has changed over the 30 years that Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning has been in business. In years past, the heating and air guy, when they were sizing up, trying to figure out what size air conditioning units, heating units to put in a house, they'd kind of like walk through the house, look at the rooms, and just sort of make a guesstimate. And it's a lot more detailed and complicated in terms of choosing the right size equipment to heat and cool your house. Because if you have a lot of times people, it's based on tonnage, right?
That's correct.
And so like an average 2,500 square foot house, what size tonnage equipment would a house that size typically have?
Typically, many years ago, you would typically see a 5-ton in that situation. With the current standards, the way homes are being built nowadays, that would be cut down to maybe even a 3-ton, just depending on your insulation.
Okay. And a lot of times people think, I'd rather have the extra 5 tons. I mean, that seems like the system would be able to cool my house even colder or heat my house even warmer, but that's not the case, right?
No, that's not the case nowadays. With the new construction nowadays, the homes are much tighter. Insulation, your windows are much more energy efficient than they used to be in years past. So you have to have a unit that is adequately sized for that, or you could run into problems where you're not removing the humidity from the house like you want it to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if a heating and air conditioning, if the equipment is not properly sized, it's going to run more often. It's going to use more energy, right?
Right, it's going to run more often. You're not going to get the dehumidification that you need, which could cause moisture and mold problems in your house, because mm-hmm. that is very critical so that it is sized right, because you want it to run to adequately remove that moisture from the air in your home.
Gotcha. People are so concerned about energy costs. Every time you pick up the newspaper, it seems like, you know, the SCE&G is raising rates again. And so how can Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning help a homeowner save money when they're running their heating and air conditioning systems?
One thing is to have the system checked, make sure it's operating efficiently. Have your ductwork checked for air leaks, any things like that. Typically, ductwork is in a crawl space or in an attic space. And you certainly don't want to cool your attic or cool the crawl space. So you just throwing money away on your energy bills, for that matter.
A lot of times, you know, when people hear that, they say, oh, they're just trying to, you know, get some extra money out of me. But on a personal basis, I know that when I've had service contracts with heating and air conditioning systems, they have found things like, oh, by the way, there was a duct that wasn't attached to your the register inside your house and the vent inside your house. And so who knows how long you've been heating and cooling the crawl space underneath your house.
That is exactly correct. Many times you can see potential problems before they happen, so you can be proactive and save some costly repairs down the road.
What about when vegetation grows up around the condenser outside your house? Does that affect how efficiently your system will operate? And would that be picked up with a service contract with Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning?
Yes, it would be. Clean the vegetation out of the unit outside. A lot of times leaves will fall down inside the unit. And you definitely don't want to let the grass and vegetation grow up around that outside unit. You want to keep the grass cut, keep it free and clear of obstructions so airflow can go through that unit as easily as possible.
And these days, I remember when I bought my very first house in 1991, SC&G had a program where they would loan you the money to buy a heating and air conditioning system, but it had to be a high efficiency heating and air conditioning system. And at that time, that was a 12 SEER heating and air conditioning system. That's quite outdated now. 12 SEER is not a very efficient unit, right?
That's correct. Now everything will be a minimum of 14 SEER.
14 SEER. And what does SEER stand for again?
SEER stands for the Seasonal Energy Efficiency Ratio.
Do you want your unit to have a high number or a lower number?
You want that number to be as high as possible.
Okay. And so 14 is the minimum. 14 SEER is the minimum now. And how high do the units run as far as a SEER rating goes?
Some manufacturers are up to around 24 SEER now.
24 SEER. Wow. Okay. And talk about the, what's the term for it, the variable speed units. Talk about that a little bit.
Most units nowadays have variable speed blowers in them. So the airflow as it goes through your home, it's not just one speed all the time till it turns off. It can actually speed up, slow down to the particular cooling needs at that time in your home. So therefore, you'll get better cooling, better dehumidification out of that system.
Hmm. So let's talk about a couple tips. Should people turn off their air conditioning, heating or air conditioning system when they leave the house for work and just let the house heat up during the day or cool down during the day if in the wintertime?
Actually, they're better off just getting in at a comfortable temperature and just leaving it there and all the time.
What's the most efficient temperature in terms of saving money?
Generally about 78 degrees in the summer and about 68 degrees in the winter.
Okay, good. And if you go below that 78 degrees in the summertime, it's going to cost you more to run your system. And then if you go above 68, it's going to cost you more in the wintertime.
That's exactly true.
Okay. So if you leave your system off all during the day and you come and turn it off, the system's going to have to work extra hard, and you're going to pull more energy, use more energy. Is that right?
That's correct. The system will typically run for several hours to cool it down without shutting off in that case.
We're in the winter months, so do you prefer gas heat or heat pump heat, which is electric heat?
Gas heat is a little bit drier, warmer heat. Typically, once the customer is used to gas heat, then they want to stay with it. They don't like a heat pump after that. It just mm-hmm. doesn't feel warm enough to them.
Gotcha. All right. Well, how can folks get more information about Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning?
They can give us a call at 843-552-3772. They can check out our website at smithshvac.com and come by and see us at 4759 Franchise Street. We'd be glad to see you.
All right, great. Well, we have been talking with James Guerin with Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning, and come out to see Smith's at the Charleston Home and Design Show January 29th through the 31st at the new Gilliard Center in downtown Charleston. Thanks, James.
Thank you, Tim.
I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and I want to thank you for listening to Talking About a home show on the radio. Today's radio show is sponsored by Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning. And now we're talking with architect Bill Huey with Bill Huey and Associates. How you doing, Bill?
Doing fine. Thanks, Tim. Good morning.
Good. Bill, take a moment and tell everyone about Bill Huey and Associates.
We're an architecture firm in downtown Charleston. We've been in operation now for 20-plus years. We're actually on our 22nd year, about to start our 22nd year. We do a very diverse range of projects. We do commercial, residential, historic renovation, restoration work as well. We enjoy a good variety of projects. We're mainly known for custom residential work, and we do residential work really all over the area, down from the South Island, Seabrook, Kiowa, up to Isle of Palms, Mount Pleasant, downtown Charleston, really all over. I have a project actually going right now in Miami, Florida. So we do work all over the Southeast as well.
That's great. That's great. And Bill, you're also a Clemson graduate?
I am a Clemson graduate.
So you must be very, very happy this year, huh?
I'm very happy and very excited.
Well, congratulations on the success of the Tigers this year. So Bill, you have been, and you've been practicing as an architect for how long?
Actually, I came to Charleston in 1987, and I really started working for an architecture firm then. I worked in Atlanta for a couple of years prior to that, but in a related field, but not directly in architecture.
Good deal. So you're coming up on 30 years or so in the business.
That's right. I'm feeling old.
have things changed a lot since you started?
They have changed a good bit. I really began... As most architects do, we are interns. We work under the tutelage of a professional, and we do that for a series of years. So when I began my experience with architecture, I learned from my mentor that the rapport that we would have with builders worked a certain way, and we worked on commercial projects and residential projects. I learned a lot from my mentor. And I've seen that evolve over time. The commercial model was always pretty well set, and it seems to be fairly consistent today. But the residential model has changed a bit. It used to be that we dealt with a lot of people who grew up in construction. They basically, they were the same guys who wore a tool belt and drove a pickup truck. They were the general contractor worked on the project, and they were very involved in things. They would even be involved in some design elements, picking trims and moldings, and a collaborative was what I came along understanding and working with builders. And then over time, that's kind of changed. It's become more of a model now where I see more contractors who basically are more or less handling the trades more on a business model. So they're basically, I'm not going to say brokers, but it's the idea that they're brokering the trades. And they're handling all the paperwork as a central point of contact for the clients. So if you want to talk to the guy who's actually doing the work, you're going to have more interaction with a subcontractor than you are a general contractor in some cases. Now, there's still plenty of guys out there who still are very hands-on as well. So there's a good mix of people right now.
Well, it is a challenge, I think, when anyone is looking to build a house. There's a tendency to want to rush the process, and I think that's I call it the HGTV mentality, where in 30 minutes you can go from start to finish on a project, and it's by the time the show's over, the project's finished, and people would love to snap their fingers and have their brand new house finished. And I've talked to some builders in the past that have said that they wish homeowners would take a little bit more time to do their due diligence and not rush the process. And they've even compared some homeowners taking more time to research buying a car than they would maybe researching the builder and who they're going to be working with. And when it comes to that relationship of working with a builder for your custom home, you're going to be working very closely with that person for 8 months up to a year or even longer, depending on the size of the project. And how, as an architect, how do you help your clients choose the right builder so that it's a good fit personality wise, and ultimately the homeowner is getting that beautiful house. The outcome is what they're hoping for.
Well, you're right about your observation about time. We do have clients that come to us, and they do want a pretty fast turnaround. So one of the things we do very early is we sort of hit them with a timetable. And usually when we're talking about a fully custom designed home, and it depends on our workload, of course, at any given time, but we usually tell them the design process alone, we like to take about 6 months just in the design process, and then construction they should anticipate at least a year. Mm-hmm. So we tell them that up front. It sort of gets that time issue out of the way. And then we start talking about contractors and how that rapport works. So I actually introduced the idea of going through a relationship with a contractor very early in my relationship with a client. Even when we're beginning to do schematic drawings, first sketches of drawings of a house, we'll talk about how we're going to work through helping them find a builder and them finding a builder. Basically, we offer, even when we initially meet a potential client, we offer really two potential contractual relationships that we can have with them. One is sort of a design build scenario where if they know a builder that they may want to work with, or they've heard of a friend or a relative who has a builder that comes highly recommended, we'll enter in a relationship with them and that builder, and we'll actually design and we'll have the builder involved in pricing as we design. Mm-hmm. So we'll begin some concept drawings and sketches. We'll put those maybe up to maybe a hard line form, a CAD form, and then we'll bring a builder in. We'll start running an initial price analysis right there. And what I tell my clients is that's very beneficial to them, because we're not going to draw the full-blown set of plans. We're just going to get a price based on the premise of what we've got, the idea we've got in a design development set. And if the price is a little off, we can go ahead and work on the design and tweak it, if you will, to make it price sensitive. So that's a very enticing relationship. A lot of people, though, do hold out the reserve to bid a project. So the other scenario we present to our clients is potentially a full-on bid process. And what we explain to them is it takes more of our time to do that, because what we do is once we complete our drawings up to a bid form, which are more thorough drawings, we actually help them, first of all, qualify builders. They may know of, it could be 5 or 7 or 10 people that they've heard of. And sometimes we can give some initial response based on people we've worked with in the past. A lot of times people will bring names of folks I don't know, so I want to meet them, talk to them, mm-hmm. understand what projects they work on. We'll go tour homes with our clients. We'll do basically anything we need to do to help our clients be happy with the selection. But we usually recommend to them that when they're bidding a project, they really probably only want to get 3 bids. Mm-hmm. Contractors know back in the day when things were rough a few years ago, which hopefully we will not see again mm-hmm. in our lifetime. There were jobs that were basically 12 bidders would be on the job. I've heard of jobs where 12 bidders were on the project because everyone was so hungry and everyone wanted a chance. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, you're the 12th guy on a bid list. What's your odds really of getting the project, and how much really effort are you going to put into a good quality bid? So fortunately, those days seem to be over, and we steer our clients into the 3 three builder bid scenario where we know that they're all competitive. They all know they have a shot of getting the job. And one thing, a very important thing I tell my clients is in a bid process, you need to be happy with everybody bidding that job and confident in any one of them to get the job. You know, we don't play favorites and we don't do any of that kind of thing with our bid process. Anybody who bids the job has a fair chance of getting the job.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on price. Could also be based on personality and interaction with clients. And so when we go through a bid process, it's a qualifying of the builders to bid, and then we help the builders during the bid. The bid process usually takes around 3 weeks. We present the drawings to them. They'll take about 3 weeks to get all their subs and trades, and they'll get a lumber price and a window price, et cetera. And we'll basically then take that information, they'll bring it all back, and we actually do a comparative spreadsheet of the three bids based on topics and categories of the project. We help them analyze the numbers, and then we have qualifying meetings with each contractor. We talk about how they got to their numbers, and sometimes the numbers actually end up being adjusted a little bit because somebody missed something or somebody overpriced something. And actually, when we do that, it turns out that most of the time the three bids get a lot closer in price. And I an analogy I give was I worked on a project in downtown Charleston, a pretty major renovation. It was actually an over $1 million project. And we had three builders bid the job. And at the end of it, by the time we qualified the whole thing, they were within $5,000 of each other, all three of them. And I looked at my client and he said, well, now I know what it's going to cost to do this job. And I said, now you have the luxury of picking the builder based on who you feel personally you can work with and have that rapport with. I think that's a luxury that an architect can bring to a client, is a little more of that time, a little more in the process to help them qualify a builder, get a rapport and a relationship understanding with a builder, and pick who they want to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always said that it can be... Well, harkening back to the recession, we were talking about the so many, like 12 builders wanting to bid on a job. You know, if you don't have an advocate, and that's what an architect is your advocate. If you don't have somebody, especially in that early stage, that is helping you choose that builder. I can remember hearing some stories from builders who would say, you know, I'm losing jobs because the homeowner is not aware of some of the small allowances, the inadequate allowances. They might have a builder might bid and put in $5,000 or $10,000 for lighting, and these are some of these line items that a homeowner might not pick up on. And so the homeowner, all they look down at is the bottom line, and they say, oh, well, this guy's the cheapest, and you know, my cost per square foot is cheaper with this one. But when it comes time to pick the lighting, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I love this fixture, and it's $5,000. Oh my gosh, that's all I have in my lighting allowance. So now all of a sudden that cheap builder is not so cheap anymore, because you're having to come out of pocket to cover the cost of what the items that ultimately go into your dream home will, you know, what you ultimately want in there. And so that's something that you, as an architect, you would be able to notice that and say, you know, based on what I've learned and from talking to you, I think you're going to want more in your lighting allowance, right? Is that
definitely that is one reason we do that. Again, we kind of do that comparative spreadsheet analysis of bids, and lighting, for example, is one line item of that. And we do a comparison of the bids that have come in, and usually there's a range. If it's an open-ended topic like lighting, or sometimes appliances, if they haven't been selected yet by the client, there's an allowance number that's plugged in. And so we can actually compare the allowance numbers in the bids to see if the bids are comparable that way. Otherwise, you're right, they're stuck with an allowance number that may be inadequate at the end of the job, and they feel like they're going to get change ordered to death. If we can do a comparison during the bids, and qualify the bids appropriately, those surprises really go away. Mm. And then, we, of course, we give our input. We know the clients by then and the level of finish that they want, the level of quality that they want. And we help them understand what is a realistic allowance or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of the process of what we do, is helping them.
Yeah, here's the mindset of a homeowner. They talk with their wife and they're like, okay, so we're gonna build a house. Okay, so you know, time goes on. They maybe buy a lot, and then they say, well, you know, they talk with different friends and they know, okay, well, you know, X amount of square foot, $250, $300 a square foot times, we want this to be about a 4,000 square foot house or whatever. So, okay, we're going to get ourselves a loan, or we're going to spend X amount of dollars. And when they take that leap of faith of committing to the dollars, they just assume that the outcome of the project is going to be, you know, a house that could be seen in a magazine or you know, on HGTV or something, when in fact it's possible that you might commit to spend all that money and then at the end of the project not be completely happy with. And so, you know, having an architect on board from the very beginning to help not just with the design of the house, but also with choosing the contractor, it just helps to connect all the dots and ensure that the outcome of the project is going to be what the homeowner wants.
That's definitely true. And one of the first questions we ask potential clients when they come in, or new clients once we sign them on, is what have you heard the cost per square foot is? We ask them that question first because we want to see if what they're hearing is realistic. And oftentimes I will throw out a number given where their house is being built, the type of house they're building, you know, is it in a flood zone, is it elevated, you know, is it in a resort, whatever. I know just by doing work there what the mean average cost per square foot to build is. And if they give me an unrealistically low number, I tell them right away, no, it's actually probably going to be more like this. And, of course, they have to sit at the table with a blank stare for about 5 minutes. You know, what do you mean? You know, you're scaring me. But I said, no, what we need to do is be realistic here, because if the budget is actually a set fee, then we may need to tailor the square footage or the level of detail or whatever to accommodate your budget. So I actually present them with a sticker shop really up front.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that's a very constructive way to have a rapport with a client, because it lets them know that I, as an architect, am involved with helping them establish a project on a budget. And that's very important. The other thing I do is when we do bid a project, and let's say the three bids have come back in, I've got them on the table, and the client's coming in for the first time to look at the bids, I say, well, go ahead, flip to the back sheet, look at the bottom line. I know you want to do that. Go ahead and do that. You know, let them get that out of the way. And then we get into actually analyzing the bids. We look at the line items. We look at the costs. And I show them a spreadsheet again that I do in comparison. And it shows them, okay, contractor A and B have allowed X dollars for lighting. Contractor C has allowed Y dollars for lighting. It's a little off the curve here. So we actually can even do some adjustments comparatively to show them how the contractor's numbers actually truly compare to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we'll even summarize the allowances into an average number, and that really brings everything right into a comparative number right there. Usually, again, the numbers get closer, so they're able to look at the builders, and they're able to say, okay, I like you, I want to work with you personally, and I know you can build for, you know, a good number for me.
Mm-hmm. Anybody who has ever built a house and worked with an architect and then they build another house, they always work with an architect. You, I'm sure, yeah, you have repeat customers.
Definitely.
And yeah, it's almost like, if you're in the know, if you have worked with an architect, then you're in the know, and you know the value of working with an architect, that they're actually going to save you money, that it's not there is obviously a cost to working with an architect, but it's going to save money and then you're going to get a better product. And I think that's the biggest, compliment or suggestion I could make is that if, look at the people who have built homes before and work with architects. They always hire an architect. No question about it. They're going to work with an architect in the future.
That's right.
Bill, how can folks get more information about Bill Huey and Associates?
Well, you can reach us by phone, 843-805-6700. Online, we're at HueyArchitect.com. And my email is mail@HueyArchitect.com. That's one word, HueyArchitect.com.
All right, great. Well, we've been talking with architect Bill Huey with Bill Huey and Associates. Thanks so much, Bill.
Thanks, Tim.
I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and I want to thank you for listening to Talking About a home show on the radio. Today's radio show is sponsored by Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning. And now we're talking with Scott Brecke with Just Additions and Remodeling. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Good. Scott, take a moment and tell everybody about Just Additions and Remodeling.
Yeah, thank you. Just Additions and Remodeling has been in business for over 30 years, and our focus is to really design, build for the customer within mm-hmm. their budget, and that can be with, you know, a bathroom remodel, kitchen remodels, and as well as additions.
Gotcha.
Of all sorts and sizes.
So a lot of times homeowners, they buy a house, they love the location, they love the lot, they might be mature trees, they're mm-hmm. just a great neighborhood, and they start to outgrow their space. And so they need to put on an addition. What is that something that you typically see with some of the customers of Just Additions and Remodeling?
Yes, for sure. So what we would do is I would go out and meet with that customer and kind of just analyze what their needs are. A lot of times a customer might have an idea, but what I'd like to do is just try to get an overall sense of what they really need, again, what their budget might be, and see how we can best help them and maybe come up with other ideas that can maybe give them what they need and, you know, within that budget frame. 'Cause
You've got different things like setbacks,
right?
Where you know the whatever municipality where your house is, they tell you that your house cannot be any closer to the it has to be a certain distance from the property line, that kind of thing. Is that
right.
Something that you run into sometimes at Just Additions and Remodeling?
Yes, actually we're actually starting a job fairly soon here that we actually kind of dealt with that. We thought we had 25-foot setbacks. We did a kind of a design for going on the side of the house. And once we had the survey done, we found out that we were tapped out already on that side. So we had to come up with a new idea, new design, which actually works better for the customer. And so it was kind of a blessing in disguise, I would say. Mm. But, you know, ended up just going at the back of the house, you know, doing some remodeling inside as well mm-hmm. to get what they need. Because it's what I see a lot of today is mother-in-law suites. You know, the mother-in-law, and this is what this is the same thing for this customer. Mm-hmm. Mother-in-law from Chicago is moving here, and they need a room for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're adding on, you know, basically a bathroom and a suite, a screened-in porch with the sunroom for this whole customer. So it's always good to have, you know, surveys if you have them. A lot of customers don't have a survey, so a lot of times you don't really know what you can do until you get that survey done.
Mm-hmm. It must be a challenge when it comes to remodeling. They always say, you know, you never know what's behind the walls. So mm-hmm. once we have to get into the project before we know for sure what you might run into. How do you handle that? Some of those unforeseen issues that might come up as far as dealing with the homeowner?
Yes. Well, I've been in this business for 20 some years now, and I think I've seen it all, but you don't. but, you know, for the most part, you pretty much have an idea of what's possibly there. It's doing your homework and knowing, okay, we're going to remove this wall. What's the possibility of that could be in this wall? You know, looking above, looking below it, crawl spaces, you know, it's just, it's doing your due diligence to make sure that you can try to get everything included in that wall, so there is no surprises for us or the homeowner.
What have you ever opened up a wall and ran into termites, for example?
Yeah, we haven't dealt. You know, unfortunately, we've been fortunate. We haven't dealt too much with that. You know, it's been pretty minor with that. But I mean, yeah, that's always some cases where you can get into some damage like that.
Mm-hmm. How do you help the homeowner budget, create a budget for a remodel project when there are so many uncertainties that mm-hmm. might occur while the house is under construction?
Well, it's funny because a lot of times a customer will want to spend a certain amount, and it's most of the time I would say it's them pushing it up, you know, with selections.
Mm.
So people go to these great places to pick out their fixtures and whatnot, and it's hard to sometimes stick within that budget. And mm-hmm. A lot of times they do that. But, you know, we recommend, you know, 5 to 10% contingency, you know, to have just put away, you mm-hmm. know, for those extra things. You know, we don't want to build something so tight within their budget that they're going to, you know, have issues.
Mm-hmm. What are you seeing some of the customers of Just Additions and Remodeling? What kinds of projects are they choosing to do remodel projects on their house?
Well, right now we're, you know, finishing up a screened-in porch. We're actually going to be starting a new one, screened-in porch as well soon. But, you know, a lot of bathrooms and kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes the additions, you know, they're obviously more of higher ticket volume. So, but and then obviously the setbacks and the lots and all that kind of stuff can kind of dictate that. But mm-hmm. we do a lot of bathrooms and a lot of kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
And we do all the designing for that, where people can get a real great 3D view rendering of what it's going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
So it really helps them visualize it.
Do you have customers who come to you and they say, we desperately need to update our kitchen, but they're not exactly, so they know they want a new kitchen, but they're not mm-hmm. exactly sure where all the pieces and parts will go. Is that something Just Additions and Remodeling can help with?
Yeah, for sure, definitely. And, you know, sometimes it might take a couple different designs to get the best one, but mm-hmm. What I love to do is take down walls and open up the space.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it's load-bearing, it's not an issue. I mean, typically you can find some beam, some way, somehow to make it work. And
mm-hmm.
So really open concepts is what people like to see, and so we love to – it makes for great before and after pictures.
And you're seeing Just Additions and Remodeling. You folks are seeing a lot of bathroom remodeling too. Are they? Yeah. What are they doing in their bathroom?
You know, what's really popular is in the '90s, everybody wanted a garden tub of some sort, jetted tub. Nobody used them, and so now they want to get rid of them. They put smaller showers in because of those tubs. So now people want these big 5-6 foot showers. You know, kind of a walk-in almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do a lot of basically tub to shower conversions, I would
mm-hmm.
call it.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Somebody told me a long time ago that if you're going to remodel your house, always try to add space because, you know, if you're going from, say, a 2,000-square-foot house, if you add a couple hundred square feet, if your house is valued, if you take the value of your house and divide it by 2,000, you come up with a cost per square foot.
Sure.
So if you add 200 square feet or 300 square feet, you can assume that you've raised the value of the house by you know, that much extra space that you've added on.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate?
I don't know if it's totally, you know, 100% accurate. If you can always do that square footage price, you know, with just the cost of homes these days,
mm-hmm.
you know, because when the market took a tank in 08, it took a long time for that to build back up where, you know, your remodeling or additions kind of made sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of times, you know, with an addition, it's more or less, I love the place I live. I don't want to move. You know, it's going to be usually a little bit more per square foot to add that on than what the house mm-hmm. per square foot would be. But it's looking at that long term, you know, is my goal as long term is to stay in this house, to get the best out of it. And a lot of times a customer might think they might want to add on, but because we can maybe rearrange some things or make a better layout of what their existing house would be, we can actually make it better and more usable and more cost effective too. Hmm. So there's a lot of factors that go into that.
Right, right. Somebody, this is another thing I've heard over the years, is that if you are going to remodel your house, remodel it in a way, don't choose cheap finishes and things like that, with the idea that, oh, I'm just going to sell it, you know, in a few years or something like that. Buy the products that you would live with, you would want to live with, and that's right. going to make it more valuable when you do sell your house.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I always hate the comment of, well, we might sell it. We don't want to do this because, you know, we want to be able to sell it. And, you know, I want the customer to enjoy what they want too. So...
Well, you know, I've always believed that, you know, when you get ready to sell your house, there's this whirlwind of activity. The real estate agent is saying, you need to do these improvements. You need to get the house ready for sale by doing this and this and this. So you're spending all this money at the end when you're getting ready to leave. When if you just did the remodel project now, as your kids are maybe young and they're coming up and you can enjoy the project, you're going to recoup that investment that you make in the remodel project when you go to sell it. You'll get that money back. So it's almost like, yeah, I'm paying for it up front, but I'm going to get a return on it later. So why not do it at the beginning so you can enjoy it rather than at the end when you're getting ready to sell and you can't enjoy it.
Right. No, I 100% totally agree with you on that one for sure. You know, because a lot of people, when they buy a house, they do like to see it, you know, refreshed and renewed and updated. And what's the point of doing all that when you can't enjoy it?
Mm-hmm. Well, tell everyone how they can get more information about Just Additions and remodeling.
Well, you can go to our website, which is justadditions.com. And you can definitely look at our website, our pictures. And there's a contact information on there as well that you can fill out, and we'd love to come out and talk with you.
Well, good deal. How about a phone number?
Yeah, 843-352-7341.
All right, great. Well, we have been talking with Scott Brecky with Just Additions and Remodeling. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and I want to thank you for listening to Talking About a home show on the radio. Today's radio show is sponsored by Smith's Heating and Air Conditioning, and now we're talking with Eddie Plowden with Berkley Electric Cooperative. How you doing, Eddie?
Great, Tim. Thanks for inviting Berkley Electric Cooperative to be on.
Sure, yeah. Eddie, take a moment and tell everybody about Berkley Electric Cooperative.
Well, Berkley Electric Cooperative is a member-owned electric cooperative, been around for 75 years. And, of course, the cooperative is, you know, celebrating that 75th anniversary with the 75 Acts of Education, where we're actually talking to schools and community groups and trying to educate on wise use of energy and also electrical safety.
Very good. Very good. Well, congratulations on 75 years of service to the community for Berkley Electric Cooperative. A lot has changed in those years. How does Berkley Electric Cooperative keep up with all the changes that occur?
Well, Berkley Electric Cooperative founded in the rural areas when there was actually no electricity. And now look at, you know, we're over almost 90,000 member accounts, and you know, we do continue to increase our technology. If you look at the online offerings through our website and our Smart Hub actually gives members opportunity to look at hourly usage on their on the energy usage, so they can better manage their usage. So it's all online for our members.
Nice, very nice. Well, let me back up for a second. What is an electric cooperative?
Electric cooperative is an electric distribution company providing power to its members. You know, we're owned by our members. We're a nonprofit. You know, we basically give back capital credits to our members each year, and owned by our membership. So we're all about services to our members. We want to provide value to our members through good education on safety, wise use of energy and programs, and provide very high quality service.
Where is power from Berkeley Electric Cooperative available in the Lowcountry?
Okay, we have district offices in Monk's Corner, Goose Creek, Johns Island, and Allendale. So we basically are in the what used to be rural areas, but now, of course, Seabrook and Kiowa and all of a lot of Berkeley County is not rural as much as it was in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly go to our website and you can look at our territory map.
Gotcha.
More information.
And it's member owned, which means it sounds like there's not pressure to make a profit or to have dividends for shareholders, that kind of thing. Does that translate to lower power rates for your members?
Actually, in this area, it does translate to lower power. And we're happy in 2016 because of our management, what we're doing. We are not planning on having any kind of power rate increases during 2016, which is really, really great.
That is awesome. It seemed I've been hearing a lot about more energy efficient lighting. Can you talk about that and give some advice to our listeners?
Yeah, lighting going from incandescent over to whether it be compact fluorescent lighting or LED. The LED lighting is offering real good choices now, and it uses about 1/5 amount of power of your incandescent lighting, and of course you're putting out a lot less heat also in those areas. They do have a real quick payback on buying this lighting, whether it be commercial or residential. If it's a long use a situation, then you can get your money back.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a commercial business right now, and these lights running all day long when they're open, and they would have a very quick payback for having the upgraded fluorescent bulbs or using LEDs on the spotlights.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have two daughters, and we've purchased over the years at least one Easy Bake Oven, and those cakes that my daughters make in the Easy Bake Oven, they are baked using an incandescent bulb. Mm-hmm. Right, the heat from that bulb is what is hot enough to bake a little cake for the girls. So when you remove the incandescent lights and you install like an LED lights or CFLs, are you able to get the same type of lighting the same color of lighting and so forth?
Yes, you can. I was going to talk about that. If we talk about Kelvin color, the typical incandescent bulb gives off more of a orange glow, sort of like back to the old candle idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in the 2500 to 2700K light color. And you can look at any of the home stores that provide lighting. They'll have a display on what color lighting you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can get LED and also CFL bulbs in that more favorable color. The higher numbers, like 5,000K, more like daylighting, and it's a really bright white light. And some folks may like that type of light. So look for the color.
Is there any do you have a preference, or what do you have in your home, CFLs or LEDs?
Mostly LEDs on long-term usage, like your can lights, your par fixtures, going with LED and going with the 2700K color, because mm-hmm. I like that color, and so that really bright white in a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And in other areas, you may want to have that white light. Maybe even for outdoor lighting, you might want to have that real bright white light.
Gotcha. A lot of people have remodeling projects that they're planning to do in the new year. What does Berkeley Electric Cooperative recommend people think about when they are doing a remodel in their house?
Well, remodeling may not be just looking at the tile and the carpet and the paint. If you're adding onto a home, make sure that the heating and air and the duct system is going to match up with the new system. Put some money into your duct work and your heating and air to make sure that it is tested. And the duct system is tight, it's providing the right amount of airflow into those new rooms, and also that the air can actually get back to the main return. Because if it does not get back to the main return, you're locking yourselves into higher bills than you need to have.
Mm-hmm. And as far as recommendations on insulation and that kind of thing, what does Berkeley Electric typically recommend?
Well, mainly do meet the energy code, you know, R13, R15 in the walls, you know, certainly doing the Tyvek or the air infiltration barrier, making sure those rooms are actually, you know, very well sealed up is very important. Also, in your lighting fixtures, if you're using recessed cans, use ICAT, which is airtight fixtures, you know, not just go with ones that actually the air can just blow right into your attic. Mm-hmm. So get ones that are they're airtight. I mean, those fixtures are only, you know, $4 or $5 more per a piece, but they're very well worth the investment.
Hmm. You know, a lot of people check their bank accounts once or more a day. They know exactly what's in their bank account. Mm-hmm. Are there any options like that that people could Berkeley Electric Cooperative customers could do to check their energy usage?
Yeah, our members, again, you can go to the App Store, Apple, Android, and download the Smart Hub app for Berkeley Electric Cooperative, or go through our website, berkeleyelectric.coop, and look at your hourly usage. You can look at daily kilowatt-hour usage and hourly kilowatt-hour usage. And what this does is, you know, take, for example, at night when you're asleep, you should have everything pretty much shut down, but are a lot of things running in your house and using power that you shouldn't be using. So it's real easy to look at that and find out what's going on. And this is available for residential members and also for commercial. And this is a value-added free service from the electric cooperative.
Nice. And you mentioned that there, as far as electric usage goes, are there certain things that people should unplug that are kind of, what's the term, vampire devices or something like that, something that is using electricity that you don't really need to be using?
Yeah, certainly if you see a light on at night, then it's using power. Even your game systems, if you're leaving those on for your children, or, you know, cable, those type of things stay on. But, you know, one thing, like for heating and air, don't allow your system to run on continuous fan. That's going to be something that's going to run like 500 watts continuously, and it also leads to greater heating and cooling losses in your duct system. So we recommend, you know, automatic setting. And of course, we always recommend a good temperature setting, energy efficiency setting for that. You know, like 68 degrees in the wintertime is a good setting. You know, you go above that, you're talking about 3 to 5% increase in your bill.
Mm-hmm. And then in the summertime, you want people to set their thermostat a little higher, right?
Yeah, you're talking about 75 to 78 degrees. And, you know, whether it's winter or summer, the warmer you set it in the wintertime, you're about 3 to 5% increase in your heating bill. And the typically in the wintertime, the heating system's going to be about half of your, you know, total bill to more than mm-hmm. half.
And what about people who leave ceiling fans on when they're not home or they're not in the room?
Well, I mean, do you leave 40-watt light bulbs on all the time when you're gone just because, even though you're not home? I mean, typically you wouldn't do that. It's the same thing with ceiling fans. We recommend cutting them off when you're not home to help you when you're in the room in that area.
Right, because they cool your skin, mm-hmm. not necessarily the room itself. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Yep. In the wintertime, we want them to actually blow up in a real slow and blow up. You're pushing the heat up and down the walls. It's not blowing straight on you, so you don't feel cool.
And I always forget, is it counterclockwise or clockwise that blows that you do in the summer or the winter?
It's counterclock in the wintertime.
Counterclockwise in the winter.
You want it to blow up.
Okay.
In the winter.
And then clockwise in the summer for everything to blow down. Gotcha. Well, how can folks get more information about Berkeley Electric Cooperative?
Go into Berkeley Electric Cooperative's website. It's berkeleyelectric.coop, or call in the cooperative at 843-761-8200, and we'd be glad to talk to you and help you with your energy usage and questions.
All right, great. Well, we've been talking to Eddie Plowden with Berkeley Electric Cooperative. Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you. Talking about a home, talking about me and you, the things we'll do or say to home. I'm not talking about a one night stand. I wanna be your man. I said a home.
You've been listening to Talking About a Home, a home show on the radio. Talking About a Home is brought to you by the publishers of Charleston Home and Design Magazine and the organizers of the Charleston Home and Design Show and the Custom Home and Remodel Show. To make contact with any of the companies featured today, visit newhomecharleston.com, Charleston's online home show, and home to over 200 local home-related companies motivated to work with you.